You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea. But you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Are you confused about what to do to get started on your path to preparedness? My book, Making the Best of Basics, Family Preparedness Handbook, is the number one all-time best-selling book ever on helping people become prepared or getting better prepared. Get a copy of my book and get it through Freedomizer Radio by going to makingthebestofbasics.com. Pick out what you'd like to buy. There are a number of alternatives. All Freedomizer Radio listeners can get it for one-half price. Special offer, when you're ready to check out, go down to the discount code, type in present, because it's a present I'm making to you, and it'll automatically discount the price by 50%. Such a deal. And you can learn more by listening to Dr. Prepper, CPR, Critical Preparedness Radio talk show at Freedomizer Radio.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
My name is Dr. Eric Norman. I have studied vitamin B12 deficiency for over 35 years. I have developed the urinary MMA test to detect tissue B12 deficiency early, allowing treatment and prevention of permanent disability. B12 deficiency can cause anemia, but also neurologic problems such as spinal cord degeneration, paranoia, and dementia. B12 is found only in animal sources, so vegetarians become deficient. As people age, they may not produce enough stomach acid or intrinsic factor protein for absorption of B12 and become deficient. Up to 10% of seniors may have a normal serum B12 level, but a tissue B12 deficiency causing a 3 times greater risk for heart attack, stroke, or Alzheimer's. For more information, visit B12.com.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from libertystickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's libertystickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Hello and welcome to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host. How's it going, John?
Great, and happy birthday to you today.
Thank you. To all of our listeners, it's my birthday. All I want for my birthday is for everybody on the internet to listen to this show. I know that's probably not going to happen since live show, but make sure you download the podcast after so you can listen.
That would be quite a present.
Dude, seriously, to have every internet user listening to the show, dream come true.
Yeah.
Probably dream come true for Proof, too, since he owns the station.
Yeah, he'd be a happy camper.
Yeah. We'll go ahead and start the show from the Barefoot community. We've got a whole bunch this week. Mount Sinai NYC, which is a quite known hospital, this summer, avoiding barefoot in damp public places to mitigate your risk of fungal nail infections. And they've got a link to an article on the healthybytestnyc.com. Which is kind of full of misinformation. But let's just chat about this for a minute. They say, your favorite boots have been packed away. The warm socks that kept your feet cozy during the long winters are back in the boxes under the summer shoes are the favored footwear. From sandals and slings to Birkenstocks and a whole bunch of other shoes. During the warmer months, open-toed shoes are everywhere, once again exposed. Dreaded fungal nail infection. Apparently people dread these things. How do you avoid it? If you have it, how do you get rid of it? Most fungal nail infections affect the toenails, although they can appear in fingernails too. That's gross. Keep your toenails and fingernails and feeling great this season by knowing what fungal nail infection is and how to avoid it or treat it. What is it? Fungal nail infections typically occur when microscopic organisms invade the skin or through the small separation between the nails and the nail bed, which is really nasty. These dermatophyte fungi live and thrive in warm, moist environments, including on the dead tissue of nails, hair, and outer skin layers. Yum. So they said, how is it spread? And first two words, and how is it spread? Barefoot. Are the first two words. They say walking barefoot in damp public places like gyms or near swimming pools can increase the risk of developing nail infections. And don't forget, wearing shoes that make your feet moist or sweaty provides conditions for fungi to grow and thrive. So they start out with some sort of misinformation in the how it spread, but they do the real truth. That it's when you put your feet in those sweaty, nasty shoes. Not all shoes are nasty, but ones that trap your feet, what many barefooters call foot coffins, those dark, closed-back shoes, make your feet moist and sweaty. That's how the foot fungus grows. They say the best way to avoid it is to take proper care to keep your skin dry. But then they also say it's recommended not to share manicure and pedicure tools or walk barefoot in public places. Keeping your skin clean and dry is easily facilitated by walking barefoot in public places. What are your thoughts on this article, John?
I think you know my thoughts on the article. Yeah, I have never had a nail fungus. I'm knocking wood, I guess, but I think it's because my feet are dry. If they're exposed and they're open, they're going to be dry. it doesn't make sense to me that you're going to get it barefoot when, you know, it's like a shoe is like a terrarium. It'll grow things. You know, it's got its own little habitat built in there. So,
yeah.
No, I don't disagree with, I disagree with that article.
Just the way that they presented some of the statements are not, some of those statements are not necessarily true. But some of them are. I love that Foot points out that it's the shoe's fault. All the shoe's fault. Yes, going barefoot, you might pick up the fungus, but it's not going to grow on your foot if you don't give it a chance to. It's like if you were to spread seeds on dry, hard ground. They're not going to grow unless you water them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, we've got some more positive tweets. Earth Runners says, from the tree to my toes, the earth's energy flows. And they've got a link to their Instagram of, they're not totally barefoot, but they're in, it looks like some sort of Vivo barefoot or Huarache sandal, Zero sandal, some sort of very minimalist shoe to allow earthing as well. Stan Foss on August 6th, which was Thursday, said it's National Wiggle Your Toes Day, August 6th. Go barefoot. I didn't know that was a thing, but apparently August 6th is National Wiggle Your Toes Day. So,
Missed that one. Should be August 8th in your.
It's every day for me.
I was gonna say. But in your honor, I was saying it should be on August 8th.
Well, yeah, because it's my birthday. There's another one here from Earth Runners. Get where you want to go while remaining true to your barefoot. Dan Edwards says, the barefoot athlete from the ground up, and he's got a link to an article about training barefoot and how the human foot is a masterpiece of engineering. It's quite a long, it's on danedwards.com. It's called The Barefoot Athlete Movement from the Ground Up. And you can look that up. Dan Edwards, D-E-S. So danedwards.com. Ground up. It's too long to read on the air. It's basically everything we already know, that due to the way that the foot is formed, you'll have more shock absorption, more power, more strength in your feet. You'll realign your body naturally. Things with a lot of scientific detail about it. Vivo Barefoot tweeted, barefoot kids have more flexible arches and stronger muscles compared to those who... And they got a picture of a bunch of kids climbing a tree barefoot. And they tweeted... an article from website vivobarefoot.com showing the difference between natural feet and normal feet, because natural feet and normal feet don't look the same. You know, normal feet have been stuck in shoes, meaning, well, not how they're actually supposed to be. And so they're foot shaped and mangled, and natural feet are much more widespread. Like you see a barefoot footprint of someone who's been wearing shoes their whole life, the footprint isn't as wide as someone who's wearing shoes, or say Bigfoot. You know, Bigfoot's never worn shoes, so at least I don't think he has. So his toes don't form that weird pointy toe shoe shape that most people who wear shoes end up looking. The shoes they wear. Emily Reese tweeted
the word normal. I mean, you know, normal as in what society is, you know, deemed to be quote normal, but I think history is going to look back and pretty much cringe on what we consider normal.
Oh, all of these that we're doing now is not, yeah, it's not normal. Emily Reese tweeted, 1500 meter junior record, 5 minutes and 8 seconds, running barefoot. So graceful to watch. You can watch a video on USA Today's high school sports website. USA Today, pretty impressive. But yeah, Daniel Scandera from Santa Rosa, California, 7 years old, ran in the USA Today National Junior Olympic Championships held in Jacksonville, Florida, last weekend. He ran, set the new record for his age group running barefoot. I'm going to be talking a lot about Jacksonville today because I just found a group on Facebook that apparently there's a lot of barefooters in Jacksonville, and they get made fun of a lot.
I wish we'd find them.
More about Jacksonville. I know, right? They're all over Facebook getting made fun of. But, yeah, I don't know. We'll talk more about them when we're done with the tweets. Vivo Barefoot tweeted, an amazing story. 5-year-old girl saves the lives of her family when she hiked barefoot up a cliff after a car. Really amazing story. The mom was unconscious. They'd driven down a hill or some steep cliff, or I don't quite recall. I remember reading this a few days ago. But she was barefoot and in one of those 5-point harness car seats. So the ones that last clip. And she managed to wriggle out of it. She was woken up by her baby brother next to her crying. She realized what happened, was able to get out of the car seat. Amazingly, because they're designed so that kids cannot get out of them, and hiked up the cliff. She was barefoot in clothes, and it was at night, and it was cold. And she walked to a nearby house to call for help, or like flagged a car down. And yeah, this little girl is amazing. We did reach out to them to try to get a comment, but the mom did not want it on our radio show. But there. I have interviewed all sorts of websites. If you just Google 5-year-old girl saves family after car crash, I'm sure it'll all come up. Akin Olukin, I think I said that right, says, walking barefoot on earth is a great way to nourish the body and decrease food cravings. The body will absorb directly from the soil. I don't know how true that is. I've never seen any studies proving it, but it wouldn't surprise me if someday that was proven to be true. Although, hasn't done anything about my chocolate cravings so far.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I definitely have. This week especially, I've had been really bad on my cravings.
Let's Go Barefoot says, you're much more likely to get sick from germs on your hands than from germs on your feet, which is definitely a logical statement to make. Again, not seen any studies, but it's definitely a logical statement to make. Consider hands, you're always touching food, your face, everything that you touch with your hands, germs on them. Whereas with your feet, yes, you're going to pick up germs, but they don't go near your food and they don't go near your face unless you're one of those weird people that bite your own toenails. So, but you're likely to get germs on your hand. So all those people telling me that I'm going to get sick from going barefoot, you can shush. Because I'm a guy tweeted, today's kids will never know how much it hurt to get hit in the shin by a Razor scooter while trying to break barefoot. John, you were probably a kid after the days of Razor scooters, but I was about 10 or 12. Razor scooters were really popular. And oh yeah, I remember the pain of skidding my foot along the road as I was trying to stop. And yeah, that.
Big wheels were the in thing in my day, just showing my age.
Someone replied to it. They'll also never know what it was like to have the knockoff brand when these were blowing up, which my mom bought us the knockoff brand from and all the neighbors laughed. Our neighbor's dad felt bad for us and made the kid that was just a few months older than me. Made him give my little brother his scooter because he felt bad for us.
Too funny.
DM to me, barefoot for at least each day improves your health, relieves stress, and increases happiness. And they're showing that when you're wearing, they have a picture illustrating that when you're wearing shoes, you don't absorb any of the electrons from the earth. You're at a 350 volts or more if you combine them. Whereas if you're barefoot, all of that energy flows back into the ground and reduces the free radicals in you as you absorb the free electrons from the earth. So that's, it's a pretty awesome illustration. If you go on my at Sierra Barefoot, you can see it. I've retweeted it for you. Go barefoot, another one from them. No shirt, no shoes, no service signs were born from prejudice, not health or safety concerns. Really true. Talked about when all of the slaves were freed, they, you know, became the Freedmen's Bureau of tracking them down and making sure they had jobs and houses and everything, but there was still the discrimination against them. And later on in the civil rights movement, it was okay to discriminate against people because of their race. It was mostly black people who were still poor and couldn't afford shoes. And the no shoes, no shirt, no service was meant to deter their business, as well as undesirable rednecks. So there's one fact. Okay, we've shown before. Barefoot Runner Society tweeted, on the measurement of running style, risks and benefits of transitioning to barefoot or minimal footwear running. We talked about this a bit with Barefoot Alex last week. A big long study. They've got it posted on their Facebook page, Barefoot Runner Society. If you go like them on Facebook, they just tweeted it and posted it yesterday. But it's a study done by Martin Dahmer, who has a PhD, and they've watched you, so you can talk or you can read about how to safely transition from if you're still wearing shoes down to a more natural way. And here's my favorite one of the whole week. Captain Marvel News did a picture of Captain Marvel's female comic book character. And she's in these crazy high heels. And someone replies to it saying, Captain Marvel would fight barefoot before she would fight in those heels. I agree. Think that superheroes would fight in high heels. But if you also you look at Black Widow from the Avengers, if you look at her costumes, I mean, she's the only female Avenger. She's not bad. She's in shoes, which is a step up. They do have quite a bit of a wedge on them, so they're probably giving her all kinds of pain, but it's a stable wedge. So we're making progress in how our superheroes are depicted. Your thoughts, John?
Well, I guess since they are superheroes, they can get away with things mere mortals can't. So for the rest of us, we better just stay barefoot.
I like your thought process. Got a comment here from one of our listeners, Kevin's, one of our regular listeners. He says, last weekend I went to a wedding vow renewal ceremony that one of my church members were having. Another church asked me to play the piano for them. First time anyone asked me to play at a wedding. I was pondering on whether I should wear shoes out of respect for them. So I asked their daughter, do you prefer... She asked, are you comfortable wearing shoes? I don't want to compromise you being comfortable. I said, honestly, I'm more comfortable barefoot. She said it was fine. I said, are you sure? She said, no one will pay attention barefoot, so it's fine. Thanks for exam. She said, no problem. I think that's awesome. And that is a great, great story from Kevin's, showing that we actually are, you know, just a little bit at a time, that barrier for all those people who are socially unacceptable to be barefoot. And that brings me back to what I was saying earlier about Jacksonville. So, I love Jacksonville. I lived there for 6 years. John lives there. The station owner, Roof, lived there. And there are over a million people there. But we know there must be some barefooters there because it's Florida. But we finally found proof of this. There are other barefooters other than just me, John, and Proof that live in Jacksonville. And there's a Facebook called Only in Duval, which one of my friends from today. That's how I found it. And I was like, Only in Duval? This is going to be good. Because, you know, Duval County is this county where Jacksonville is. And so I go to the page and see what things are. There's public shaming of, you know, the ghetto things that only happen in Duval County, which there's plenty of. There's some Sketchville places there. But, like, some of the people who are being publicly shamed are people who are in public. And so they're standing of a gas station that they took a picture of. And someone says, barefoot and pregnant equals hood rat. Is she a pregnant prostitute? It's just, I mean, it's quite rude that they're saying on here. And most of it is, you know, not just that she's barefoot, but the choice of her outfit isn't exactly classy. But yeah, a lot of them are cocky about the fact that she's, it's not the only one. There's a lady that was at the landing, which is pretty, I think, culturally significant to people in Jacksonville. It's like a center on the river, to sum it up, which is like it's a pretty poor summary, but it's basically what it is. But then somebody took a picture. There's a lady standing outside. She's not really doing anything weird. She's talking on her cell phone and she's barefoot. And it's not like it's a dirty place. But it's, you know, people are commenting about how dirty and gross it is out there. Can you hear me okay?
Breaking up a little bit. I was sending messages in between. Didn't know if you were seeing that.
Yeah, I saw your Facebook messages that I'm breaking up. I think it's the studio. It's being very glitchy. We're working with support. Yeah, even when the playing, I started breaking up. So my apologies to everyone who is trying to listen about the bad sound quality coming from our studio. I think they're in the middle of upgrades right now, and so it's messing things up.
I think it's because everybody on the internet is listening to us, so it's probably overloading the site.
That must be. Yeah, there's just one more that I saw in the Only in Duval page. There's a picture of maybe a woman, maybe a man. Tell, it's just jeans and bare feet down. They put a doctor off his barefoot, and they didn't spell barefoot wrong. They put like bare the animal space foot. But there's a lot of people commenting on here that they're barefooters. There's one lady who says, sorry, but I go everywhere barefoot. I don't have to. If I won't. And she says, I know, shaking my head, but that's the Baker County in me, which nothing to be ashamed for. But yeah, people are commenting on here, so much for the no shirt, no shoes, no service, LOL. I thought people enforced the no shirt, no service thing. But you think
it's I love that. Tory? Enforced as if it's like a law or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And someone's commenting, at least her kid has shoes on. Someone else is very not long after I saw some kid with his mother had no shoes. And yeah, it's just a lot of and people are commenting on here at the Ocean Way Winn-Dixie, they see barefoot people all day every day. So John.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. But I sure don't see him. I mean, in the Mandarin area and general South Side, I rarely ever see anyone.
Well, most of these photos are from the North Side. So they might live in the North Side.
That probably explains it.
On the wrong side of the river from you, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're on the barefoot side of the river, I guess.
They're on the barefoot side. You're on the classy rich people side.
Well, see, you're making it. You're adding a making an assumption because they're classy and rich. They're not barefoot. So, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, the one in the doctor's office, she looked perfectly normal. Nothing.
Yeah, she just needs, like, it's not, she doesn't look so ghetto to be barefoot. And it really got me kind of riled, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with being barefoot in public. You know, we've debunked fungus myth. We've talked about the no nervous. It's all public perception. And slowly, I think, as more and more of us dare to go barefoot, we will change that perception over, hopefully. There will always be the ignorant people, still ignorant racists out there. You know, 50 years since the Civil Rights Movement. But, you know, you still get ignorant, stupid people on the internet talking about how, not that I don't agree with this. You'll if you go in political narrative group on Facebook, you'll find at least a dozen people calling Obama a monkey within 10 minutes. Guarantee it. And, you know, there's always going to be ignorant people out there, but I think the majority eventually realize how heavy is, and that there aren't, in fact, any laws against it. Like those people that were saying, I thought people enforced the no shoes, no shirt, no service rule. It's not a law, and it's not actually something that you have to enforce. And for all we know, that didn't happen. So I think get that across, it'll be a lot easier for people to go out barefoot. What do you think, John?
I hope so. And with all the information that, as I've said before, you know, growing on the internet, you would think that it would change quicker than it actually is. But, you know, there's just, you know, you type in benefits of going barefoot and, you know, you're going to get, you know, dizzy, blurry eyed before you run out of pages going over the benefits. And, you know, it's doctors and PhDs and health studies and, you know, shoe companies telling you to go barefoot. So it should at some point, society should catch up. I think another thing is generally society, you know, has this big aversion to what they consider germs and bacteria as a negative thing. And, you know, we readily accept man-made synthetic things, even though they can be very bad for you. You know, they can have chemicals in them that are extremely bad for you. But if it's something, mm-hmm. you know, that's natural, I think there's a fear that's still out there.
Absolutely. Yeah, and like you said, so many results out there. Just to check, I Googled it really quick. 511,000 results for benefits of going barefoot. And they're all from different websites, runbear.com, fitness.com, which is a website, Body Paleo, crownpunk.com, which is a publishing company on their blog. They talk about the anti-aging benefits of barefoot walking. I mean, there's just literally hundreds of thousands of sources. You have used to be ignorant.
Yeah, it's
to take an ad break.
Yeah, and Sierra,
so maybe while we're on ad break. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe we should try to dial back in or something, or do you think that's not going to help?
I'll try. Yeah.
Am I breaking up?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably just the site then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Too much traffic. The entire internet is listening.
Yeah, that's it, you know. So we're going to change everything today.
Yeah. Yeah, noting that going barefoot is good for you. While we're on ad break, just test it. Benefits of going barefoot. Just read one of those articles while we're on ad break. We'll be right back.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
This video with others. An important message from our new generation.
As men who believe in the teachings of Jesus Christ, and as citizens who love and strongly support our country, we strive to be the embodiment of these high callings, and we are devoted to standing against the forces that are actively warring within and without our once great nation. Jesus Christ is the only hope for this land, and history notes the great men of our nation who walked in his ways, causing America to be a city set on a hill for all to see, an example of the blessing of a God-fearing nation. George Washington once said, "The propitious smiles of heaven can never be expected on a nation that disregards the eternal rules of order and right, which heaven itself has ordained."
Sadly, we have been subdued, and Washington's warning is darkness covers our land and the corruption of government spreads, enabled by the complacency of the governed. We are its last defense. We are the resistance, and we are Christians and patriots. Join us every Thursday at 7:30 here on Freedomizer Radio with Christian Patriots.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. We're talking about some of the negative ways that barefooters are social news articles, you know, people making fun of barefoot people, calling them ghetto or ratchet or hood rats, news articles claiming that you will get foot by going barefoot, even while pointing out the same articles that it's actually your sweaty shoes that causes the fungus to grow. So we want to shift a little bit and talk about some positive reporting on barefooters. And an event has this that is a perfect example of this. Is from mail.uk. There was a Lord of the Rings themed in the UK. The guy dressed up as a hobbit. He was barefoot. Lady dressed up as Galadriel. Lord, she's a princess. They on and had off, like officially dressed as Gandalf. They trained eagles to deliver their rings, and all of them dressed up as like hobbits and Middle Earth. Which is awesome. Sentence. Adam did tie as he transferred Hobbit Frodo Baggins for his Lord of the Rings wedding day. Will Grant, 28, who's a big fan of the J.R.R. fantasy novel, convinced his wife-to-be, Amy Gander, 23, in a garden in Combe, North Devon, Middle Earth, for their big day. Rode to a pond and dressed as Gandalf, well-trained eagles delivered the wedding rings. So it's awesome example of positive thing. And this is like awesome too. Seriously awesome. They in the boat that they rode, they painted There and Back Again on it, which is the name of the novel that, or history that Bilbo Baggins in. Pretty cool design. Three kids dress up as hobbits. There's even one kid dressed up as Gollum or Smeagol, same character. It's pretty awesome. Google Lord of the Rings wedding if you can and look. But you know, just an exact that you can be positive when talking about something, even if you don't agree with it. So, John said, still breaking up. Okay. I'm going to try calling in a different way into the studio and hope that that clears it up. John, I'm going to give you an article to chat with really quick.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And I'll try calling in a different way. This one is from ESPN. Info.com, and it's called Follow in the Bare Footsteps of the Kalenjin, the champion runners from the tribe who barefoot. So, John, why don't you try to again fix my camera?
All right. Let me give that a shot. Okay, let me see this article. Bear with with me. Anyone knows me, I'm not the most technical person here. You sent it to me. I brought it up. Now where'd it go? Okay. Follow in the bare footsteps of Kalian. Champion runners from the Kenyan tribe show how the interventions of modern sports science can be counterproductive if relied upon too soon. Cricketers, are you listening? What can the story of running shoes among Kenyan athletes teach us about cricket? More than I thought possible. Nearly all top marathon runners are Kenyan. In fact, they are drawn from the particular Kenyan tribe, the Kalenjin, an ethnic group of around 5 million people living mostly at its altitude in the Rift Valley. Here is the real interesting thing. The majority of top marathon runners grow up running without shoes. The debate about whether other athletes should try to mimic barefoot running techniques remains contested and unresolved. However, it is overwhelmingly likely that the unshod childhood of the Kalians does contribute to their preeminence as distance runners. And yet it is also true that as soon as Kenyan athletes can afford running shoes, they do buy them. They know that the protections offered modern running shoes help them to rack up an epic number of hours of training required to become a serious distance runner. So there's a paradox about long-term potential and running shoes. If an athlete wears shoes too often and too early when his natural techniques and running style are still evolving, he significantly reduces the chance of becoming a champion long-distance runner. But if he doesn't wear them at all in later stages of his athletic education, he jeopardizes his ability to train and perform optimally no matter when it matters. Put simply, the advantage of modernity and technologies need to be first withheld and then embraced. Most Kenyan runners begin wearing trainers in their mid-teens. Some sports scientists argue that if they could hold off another 2 or 3 years, they'd become even better as an adult athlete. But no one knows for sure exactly when the right time to start running in shoes. We glimpse the ideal athletic childhood, but its contours remain extremely hazy. And I apologize, I'm reading off my cell phone and had a little trouble with that. Okay. There is no conflict between home fun training methods and sports science. It is a question of the right amount at the right time. Logically, there is a further complexity. Imagine two equally talented developing athletes, one with shoes, the other barefoot, neither yet at their athletic peak, wearing shoes by assisting training and recovery would yield an advantage at the time, but the short-term advantage would leave behind a long-term disadvantage. By depriving the athlete of the legacy of barefoot runners enjoy when they begin wearing shoes at a later stage. In other words, building the right foundation during adolescence is more important than doing what it takes to win over time. So they're putting an analogy in there. Where's the cricket here? When I read about the strange influence of first learning barefoot, then using the latest technology, admirable book, and thought-provoking book 2 Hours by Ed Caesar, published in July, I wrote in the margin, just like cricket coaching. A modern player seeking an edge over his opponent would be mad not to have access to the latest kit, technology, data, fitness coaching, and rehab techniques. But if he comes to rely on the interventions and apparatus of coaches and trainers too early, when his game and character are still in flux, then he misses out on the big advantage of the lot. Self-reliance and learning from trial and error. In other words, there's a conflict between homespun training methods and sports science. It is in question of the right amount at the right time. Indeed, the art of training always relies on stubborn mixing technique and science alongside folk wisdom and feeling. Consider the greatest of all. It goes on pretty much to talk about cricket. I think it's covered the barefoot part now. Pretty much going on to say that, you know, relying on artificial tools and things to help too early, somebody doesn't gain the correct knowledge of how to do something, and their character is impeded. Are you back on?
Yeah, Sarah? Can you hear me? Am I more clear now?
Much clearer, much clearer.
Okay. Hopefully we fixed the connectivity issue. I know we were kind of like echoing weirdly there for a little bit. Hopefully that doesn't start happening again, because that was kind of unpleasant. But
I was
yeah,
getting some
so,
of that. Yeah. When I was reading, I was getting a little bit of that.
Yeah. So hopefully it stays good. But yeah, I just think that's another great example of positive reporting of barefooting. You know, they talk about why Kenyan runners are so good is because they grow up running barefoot. Their feet are stronger. And yes, they do eventually transition to running in shoes because it helps them to train more. I mean, we had Barefoot Alex on last week. He's mostly runs barefoot, but he does put on, I don't remember what he called them, but they're minimalist shoes to help him continue running when the terrain gets too rough. You know, shoes are a tool. They're meant to be used to protect your feet. But overuse of them, or, you know, putting a 10-year-old in these big clunky running shoes that don't work as a tool at that point, they only immobilize the foot, it's actually quite dangerous to the foot. It results in foot pain, which causes ankle pain, knee pain, hip pain, back pain, you know, all the way up the whole body of pain, because you don't have a strong foundation of your body. And that really is quite a dangerous thing to do. But like they said, there's no conflict between these training barefoot methods and the sports science that's put into these shoes. You know, they do have benefits of working as tools. It's just using them in the right balance with going barefoot.
And the right time. One of the points I think that's really critical here, a child's foot, it's not bones that they have, it's cartilage. And it doesn't really fully convert over until their late teens. So they're literally forming their feet. And if they're doing it in an artificial shoe as they're growing up, or these big clunky running shoes, they're definitely going to cause some serious damage.
Oh, for sure. And it's like, when I was in grade 6, I broke my arm, and I was excused from gym for the rest of the year, even though I wasn't into, you know, the really intense sports, and I wasn't in the cast. I was only in the cast for, like, from spring break in March to, like, the end of April. So it wasn't that long of a time period, but in order to keep me from re-injuring my now very weak arm, I was excused from gym for the rest of the year. I was also excused from band for the rest of the year because just playing like clarinet could have re-injured my arm because it was so weak. And that's what you're doing to your feet when you put them in shoes. You know, it immobilizes them and makes them weak and prone to injury. But going barefoot, you use those muscles. And anytime one of my friends or relatives complains to me about foot pain, I tell them, go barefoot. It will strengthen your feet. It'll build up those muscles that are weak that are causing the pain. And it's really so simple if you think about it. But because of all the bad reputation that going barefoot does, I mean, we've talked about what happens if you search barefoot on Twitter with, you know, ratchet, ghetto, redneck, socially acceptable. Most people dislike it, but there's all sorts of positive examples as well. You know, you even see celebrities on the red carpet wearing Vibram toe shoes, the five fingers, whether they're actually, you know, Vibrams or not, I don't know, but Shailene Woodley, or Shailene, I'm not really sure how you say it. But anyways, that girl from The Fault in Our Stars and Divergent. Yeah, she, in 2012, was first spotted wearing toe shoes on the red carpet. And she wears them all the time, you know. She goes out in public wearing the toe shoes. And they report on it. And then in a BuzzFeed article that talked about it, it said, never change. You know, because that's something that sets her apart and is unique to her. But we need more of that positive reinforcement when people go out barefoot instead of, oh my gosh, they're barefoot. Which even we as a barefoot community are kind of guilty of doing. We see a celebrity barefoot and they're like, maybe they can become our spokesperson for going barefoot. It's probably kind of overwhelming to them. But it's pretty 50-50, I think, the attitudes. Maybe not 50-50, maybe like 10-90. But, you know, it's split. There's the people that are really positive about it or that don't care, and then there's people that are just so, so negative and shaming, calling it ghetto or dirty or nasty or whatever they call it that isn't positive. But it's not something that we need to be, I don't know, calling people out for. What do you think, John?
Yeah, the words, I judge you, comes to mind. You see that a lot as well attached to the tweets, being judged for being barefoot in a negative way. It's really amazing, a society that considers itself so diverse, when you really look at it, people are really follow very rigorous routines and rigorous unwritten rules in some cases. And if you're not following them, you're at the time they're in play, you're definitely an outsider at that point.
Yeah. And I think going barefoot is unfortunately a lot of times associated with foot fetishes as well. And people don't tend to like the idea of foot fetishes because it makes people uncomfortable, which is, you know, talking about anything sexual tends to make people uncomfortable, but especially foot fetishes, because there are also a lot of foot phobias, which I don't really understand because it's a body part. I don't understand the phobias or the fetish, but there's so many people out there who have one or the other, and then there's just people like us that just want to walk around barefoot and be free to do what we want without being harassed, and it all kind of gets lumped in as the same idea. You know, the people who are afraid of feet see us and freak out. The people who are fetishists see us and freak out in a different way. And then the people who don't know any better freak out in general. And it's frustrating.
And I think that's what propels some of the negativity sometimes, because if somebody does mention, you know, that they went to school barefoot or something, they might get a fetish person on there with some comments that you really wouldn't want to go into, you know.
Yeah.
And they were just very innocently saying they just wanted to go to school barefoot. And, you know, that doesn't help things much when people respond in that, you know, with respect to somebody. You can tell by their very next comments the person's rather turned off by it. So
yeah,
the person that was actually going barefoot. So, yeah, it's a very complex thing. There's a lot. I mean, you look at it from so many different sides. The bacteria germ side, you know, that there's that concern people have. The broken glass, stepping on nails and, you know, hot lava or whatever. There's that side of it. You know, and the fetish side, as you mentioned, there's just so many different aspects. It's a rather complicated subject when you really think about it.
Oh, absolutely. But I think a lot of it is maybe just people are scared of what's different, which, you know, I don't really blame them. It's scary to be different. When I first started going barefoot, I was scared to be different. I was scared to be seen doing something that a lot of people perceive to be wrong. That's part of why you created your flip tops, because it's scary to be different.
It's,
you know, even though you know you're not doing anything wrong, people look at you like you are, and so all of a sudden you're getting kicked out of places or confronted by store employees that, I mean, they think they're doing a good thing by trying to help you and keep you from getting hurt, but it's correct.
For me, I just wanted to live a normal life barefoot. The world was not allowing me to do that. So that was my way of solving that problem. It's worked amazingly well for me. I'm actually amazed how well it works for me. But I know it's not for everyone. But to me, I look at it as a bridge. You know, we have a very non-barefoot culture. And if I just have to throw something on the top of my foot to appease that, I'm more than glad to do it.
Well, that's, yeah, it's still, I don't know. I know it works great for you and you're used to it, but to me, it's like hiding and it's not, I don't know. It's not something I'm comfortable doing a lot of time.
I'm glad you said that. Cause to me, it's actually the opposite to me. At first I was concerned about that, but since I've had so much more freedom to go places that I know at some point I would have gotten kicked out of being barefoot, and just from my past experience, it would have been, you could have almost put, you know, you could almost bet on it. But because people got to know me then and became comfortable, and I'm going places where they absolutely know what I'm wearing and not wearing, and they're treating me just normal now. It kind of took the edge off of it. Whatever it was that was making them push back, it took that edge off. It wasn't like I was really hiding, because let's face it, I'm still barefoot. There's nothing on the bottom of my foot. Edge off. And I wouldn't, without having this experience, I when I first went into this, I was thinking the exact same thing. But the longer I've done it, the more I've found that I'm actually getting more people that I'm open to that know I'm going barefoot than ever before. And it's working to assimilate into society. So for me, I don't feel it's hiding at all.
I'm glad it works for you. We do need to take another ad break. When we come back, we'll talk more about some of the health benefits of barefooting, and we'll also talk about earthing. So stay tuned for that.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year, and they're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
Are you sick of being a chump, lied to by politicians and businessmen alike, watching as the world slowly burns, as trillions of debts racked up under your grandchildren's names? Hi, I'm Ben Lucifer Bernanke Cochran. I'm asking that you tune into my weekly radio show, The Patriot Power Hour with Lucifer Bernanke, each Thursday night at 6 p.m. Eastern on Freedomizer Radio. Look, I'm not trying to sell you anything here. I just need your help fighting these banks of scum. They're sick of fans, behind all the wars, failed healthcare system, I mean, they own all the mega banks, all the mega corporations. They own the media, of course. They've already conquered most of humanity, really, and their juiciest, final target. Well, we're next. America's next. So I'm not going out without a fight. So join me Thursday as I use my background in finance and risk management to decode breaking news and developments, all while helping to prepare you and your family for the future waves of financial terrorism that are sure to come. Thursday night, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on FreedomizerRadio.com.
Welcome back to Barefoot is Legal Radio. I'm your host, Sierra, joined by my co-host, John. I just want to take a second to talk about the TPP, the ad that just played, talking about the TPP. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a trying to make a partnership between the U.S. and 12 other countries. And a couple documents from that pact were recently leaked. And so I just want to go into that really quick because this is kind of important. They're trying to change copyright acts. The text includes terms that would require countries to criminalize certain types of copyright infringement and to force internet service providers and search engines to take down alleged copyright violating material or even links to it. And it's going to require a lot of overhauls of the other country's copyright laws. It's going to force internet providers to spy on their users. It would even require internet service providers to block access to websites that contain copyright infringing material in response to court orders from somewhere else in the world. It would be like if someone says, there's infringing copyright on YouTube, so now we have to block YouTube. Other clauses leaked in the text address contention between countries, namely how long copyright should apply to any given work before it enters the public domain and could be freely copied and distributed. International treaties adhered to by Canada and about half the other TPP countries put it at the life of an author plus 50 years, but the draft would leave the door open to life plus 70 years, which the U.S. is pushing for, or even life plus 100 years. The extra 20 years is robbing the public domain. And the other countries' laws shouldn't have to change based on this agreement. Copyright is something that normally changed with extensive public consultation, and they're doing this in secret. So if you want to stop this, you need to make a lot of noise about it. There's still a lot of disagreement between the various countries, but write to your congressperson or your parliament person. The countries involved in the agreement are Canada, Mexico, Japan, Australia, Peru, Vietnam, the U.S., Brunei, Chile, Singapore, New Zealand, and Malaysia. So if you are in one of those countries, write to your government official about this because it's something that they're doing in secret, not telling any of their people about. And it has the potential to have major long-term effects on the internet. So make a stink about that, please, and thank you. There's my political plug for the day. Just because the documents were leaked in the last 24 hours, I thought that was important to mention because a lot of people probably haven't heard about that yet. So now, as promised, we'll talk about earthing and the health benefits of going barefoot. This comes from an article called Restoring Our Microbiome on shoesarenotpaleo.com, which is an excellent blog for people who are interested in barefooting, for people who are interested in more of a minimalist lifestyle, getting back to kind of the natural way that people have always lived. The homepage talks about changing how people move, how people eat, and how people think, getting them back to our human instincts. But this article talks about barefooting. So one of the most contentious topics in the barefooting community is that of earthing, and that's totally true. If you post about earthing in some of the barefooting groups on Facebook, the people will call for you to be kicked out. It's kind of ridiculous. But the article continues. The traditional premise among some barefooters is that by allowing our bodies to come in direct contact with the earth, we can exchange electrons with it and literally electrically ground ourselves. Supporters claim that they have experienced numerous mental and physical health benefits by doing so. Others call it pseudoscience, saying it discredits our efforts to make better arguments for going barefoot. There's a study that was done at Boston Fermentation Festival that can explain the anecdotal results of earthing through completely different, highly plausible, and far more exciting mechanisms than electrical grounding. The article says, suppose instead of looking at Earth in terms of the physical mass of variously charged particles that makes up the planet, we consider its other meanings, dirt or soil. Shoes function quite explicitly to protect us from dirt, whether physical contamination or microbial infiltration. The new question is, what if cutting ourselves off from dirt isn't actually a good thing? Consider Earth as soil. What distinguishes it from other ground matter, rock, sand, concrete, etc., is that soil is alive. The softness, darkness, and dampness and richness that make soil different from sands and rocks are the result of biological processes happening among the plants, insects, worms, and microorganisms inhabiting it. Before shoes, we were frequently in contact with soil and, as a result, constantly exchanging microorganisms with it. By wearing shoes, we have not only instituted a barrier against getting dirty, we've also isolated ourselves from this biological exchange. We've become too clean. Contrary to our perceptions of ourselves as individual organisms, we're actually a massive conglomerate, with bacteria cells outnumbering our own 10 to 1. These microorganisms make up what we call the human microbiome, and this is not only normal, but essential for healthy human function. Our tiny symbiotic partners fulfill vital roles in immunity, wound healing, digestion, waste disposal, and nutrient synthesis. However, in our quest to combat germs or rid ourselves of pathogenic, disease-causing microorganisms, we've unknowingly created an intensely inhospitable environment for those who are actually our allies. At the Boston Fermentation Festival, John Durant, the author of the Paleo Manifest, outlined the historical stages we have gone through in our efforts to manage our interactions with microorganisms. As hunter-gatherers, long before we knew about microorganisms, and before we had begun to manipulate our environment through agriculture and urbanization, our traditional practices were more often in balance with the environment. Many animal products were eaten raw, foods were often fermented, and hygiene practices in some cultures could go as so far as smearing oneself with partially digested stomach contents of one's prey rather than rinsing with water. Many of these long-standing microbe-friendly traditions developed precisely because they were associated with robust health, not sickness. In early urban settings, we shifted towards increased population density in long-term settlements, many with inadequate waste disposal, making it easy for pathogens to survive and spread. We also lost diversity in our diets by relying on agriculture, all the while still lacking an understanding of basic sanitation. Cumulatively, the balance shifted out of our favor, and our susceptibility to communicable illnesses spiked, leading to many major epidemics like the bubonic plague. As we began to get a clue about the communicability of disease, rather than blaming it all on the supernatural, we made effective improvements in waste disposal and hygiene, which greatly improved our health and longevity. The prototypical example is the reduction in mortality of childbirth once doctors learned to wash their hands between coming from the morgue and assisting a birth. Unfortunately, the pendulum has swung too far. We have tried to obliterate disease-causing microbes without realizing the immense cost of wiping out others in the process. Non-pathogenic microbes not only provide crucial support for our own physiology, they also provide competition for resources against the more harmful invaders, making it harder for invaders to take hold and thrive. As a result of the widespread use of antibiotics, not only have we encouraged evolution of the most resistant strains of dangerous bacteria, we've made ourselves more susceptible by giving them free rein over our territory, our bodies, as well as our obsessively disinfected physical environments. The Boston Fermentation Festival was both a celebration of and an opportunity to restore some balance in our relationships with microscopic friends. There were opportunities to replenish microbiota through fermented foods, a cutting-edge new skin spray, and simply by being in close quarters with so many other human beings. Keynote speaker Sander Katz, author of The Art of Fermentation, covered a key aspect of bacterial adaptability which was completely new. Because bacterial cells do not contain a nucleus in which to confine their DNA, bacteria have the ability to trade DNA with one another based on the needs of their environment. He described DNA as, to bacteria, simply a tool that they can pick up or discard as needed depending on the circumstances. The example given was environmental access to a nutrient that they can't process. If the bacteria find DNA that give them the instructions to make use of it, they may give a competitive advantage by doing so. Conversely, if the environment changes, they can trade DNA out for something else later. The fascinating aspect of this is that as you introduce new and more diverse bacteria into your personal microbiome, they bring some new DNA to share, increasing the tools available to all of your symbiotic bacteria. As you consequently strengthen the ability for microscopic friends to thrive and make use of all available niches and gaps in your bodily ecosystem, leaving fewer excess resources available, it becomes increasingly harder for hostile outsiders to stake a claim. This is incredibly important for our immunity. Sander also makes it clear that this competition among microbes is an issue we should be taking into consideration in our environment and in our food practices as well. Often our sanitized stainless steel surfaces are much less safe than surfaces brimming with benign microbes like dirt. For example, it represents a seriously overlooked consideration in the FDA's recent stance on the health risks of wooden cheese aging boards, and may be a major contributor to why our extensive but imperfect attempts to sterilize hospital environments actually result in tremendous numbers of hospital-acquired infections. So now that we see some of the importance of healthy microbiomes, what can we do to begin to restore the ones we have so carefully demolished? There are two main steps. One, start killing them off. Two, start putting them back. The most obvious culprits, of course, in disrupting our individual human microbiomes are the broad-spectrum prescription antibiotics that wipe out essentially all bacteria in the body. While these are acute situations in which this is worth the cost, we should be extremely judicious in our use of them and consider whether the body stands a good chance of winning the battle on its own in order to spare our allies. We could also stand to reduce our societal preference for over-the-counter antibacterial products, such as bleach, antibacterial soap, and hand sanitizer. As for antibacterial soap, it's not been shown to be more effective than regular soap anyway, assuming you have the chance to wash your hands. Topical antibiotics, as with prescription ones, have appropriate uses in cleaning and dressing open wounds. Making decisions for individuals with compromised immune systems may also call for different protocols from time to time, but the average person does not need to employ antibacterial products in most day-to-day life. Less obvious than the effect of our antibacterial products, however, is that even our use of basic non-antibacterial soaps, shampoos, deodorants, and other cosmetic products on our skin microbiome. We use these products to eliminate body odor and excess oils. However, our skin bacteria are very sensitive to such products, and it may be the very use of such products which causes the majority of disruption to our microbiome and makes us stink in the first place. The solution we're being sold in the form of products may actually be what's causing the problem. In addition, because our friendly bacteria thrive most in places where we grow hair, shampoos and hair removal products are especially hard on them and deserve somber reconsideration. Most of us are not ready to reject all of our cleansing products. There are practical and social considerations to deal with, and everyone is different, and we simply still don't know enough for most of us to wean ourselves off confidently. Somewhere along the line, we will find a happy medium once we begin at least taking our microorganisms into consideration in our decisions. And she goes on to talk about reintroducing friendly microbes into your body via yogurts and keeping the dirt not necessarily out of your food. Like, yes, it's important to wash your vegetables to get pesticides off of them, but if you're getting organic ones straight out of your garden, maybe you don't need to quite wash them with such vigor. And then she also talks about ammonia oxidizing bacteria. These are the kind of bacteria that are of interest because they pick up waste products that contribute to us smelling bad and turn them into nitric oxide, a biological regulator so important that a Nobel Prize was awarded for discovering its role in cardiovascular signaling. Nitric oxide encourages blood vessels to dilate. Viagra works by enhancing signals along the same pathway. This improves circulation, which is in turn essential for countless physiological functions, maintaining energy levels and endurance, and encouraging relaxation and better moods. Ammonia oxidizing bacteria are found everywhere in nature and have never been implicated in any human illness. If you've ever walked barefoot on dirt, swam in a lake or the ocean, you probably emerged feeling refreshed and covered in ammonia-oxidizing bacteria. Although our strain is cultured and produced to cosmetic-grade quality, which is, she's referring to a refreshing cosmetic mist that they had there, they've cultured it to a cosmetic-grade quality. It has the same properties as the natural ammonia-oxidizing bacteria. And so that takes us back to the point at the beginning. Earthing might be an exchanging of microorganisms, not electrons, which John has talked about before. We've seen how important building a diverse microbiome is. We've also seen how challenging it can be to maintain them in modern living conditions. What if one of the best ways to do it is simply to increase our physical contact with the earth that most people are missing out on by wearing shoes? Earthing has been ascribed many positive effects. Better mood, better energy, better sleep, fewer illnesses, reduced allergies. It goes on and on and on. Could this be the result not of transferring electrons, but of promoting a diverse and robust microbiome through contact with the living soil? A more diverse microbiome means more DNA tools and fills more niches, thus improving immunity by making it harder for infectious microbes to take hold, resulting in fewer illnesses. Synthesis of bioregulators like nitric oxide by skin bacteria could promote circulation and enhance mood and energy levels. In addition to fortifying our skin microbiome, some might contribute to the diversity of our gut microbiome, which is known to be a major factor of our ability to digest and synthesize nutrients, which is critical for maintaining health. She links to a couple other studies that argue for the same idea. The increased contact with microorganisms in nature confers numerous psychological and physiological health benefits. These potential microbial contributions are entirely aside from the physical effects of barefooting, such as improved balance and alignment and increased use of muscles, which also helps circulation, and the mental effects of empowerment and well-being generated by taking charge and doing what's right for yourself without shoes, even against the status quo. There are quite likely still many more potential benefits to barefooting and earthing than have been mentioned here so far. This is a perfect example of how barefooting, biodiversity, nutrition, and hygiene get wrapped up so closely in a thorough appreciation of ancestral health. I think it's important that we not merely romanticize the natural, but instead we take a look at the systems, like symbiotic relationships with microbiota, which did develop through natural processes, and use them to inform our choices as well as the next questions to ask from here. So there you have it, John. There's your scientific proof about your bacteria in our body.
Love that. I truly believe we're going to find out that these microorganisms are, you know, doing us more good than they ever could do harm, as these articles are saying. And please send me that article. You know me, I'll have trouble finding it. But what was it called again? I didn't completely catch it.
It's called Restoring Our Microbiome. It's on shoesarenotpaleo.com. I'll go ahead and send that to you.
Okay, or not. Okay.
I'll just send that to you on Facebook.
We
have a comment from Kevin, who's been listening. He says, I wonder why people worry about bare feet, especially in stores, when they want to give you the safety excuse. So if I cut my hand on the shelf, should I wear gloves? If I reach the top shelf and something falls and hits my head, should I wear a helmet? Then people worry and talk about how dirty feet get. Don't our hands get dirty as well? You still have people coming out of the bathroom without washing their hands, and then proceed to touch everything else and get the nerve to shake someone else's hand. Too much focus on bare feet when other parts of the body get dirty as well, mainly hands. I totally agree with that. And that's, coming out of the bathroom without washing your hands is kind of a less hygienic thing to do than walking barefoot. And, you know, we still have people coming out of grocery stores. You know, they use the washroom in the grocery store, they go to the bathroom in there, don't wash their hands afterwards, and then they go and touch the produce. And that's disgusting. But, you know, then they worry about our bare feet, like, oh, it's not safe. But with that new evidence that the microbiomes are so important, hopefully that we'll start to see more of a shift.
Yeah, and how we define dirt. Again, it goes back to the whole organic versus, you know, man-made materials on what we consider clean or dirty. Dirty, in this case, is a very complex system that we're just insist on wiping out. also with feet, you know, as you mentioned, they go and touch produce, which, you know, hopefully nobody's doing that with their feet. But feet are also self-cleaning. With every step you take, you're wearing off anything that you had on prior. So, you know, contributing to wearing it off.
Right. As you're walking, your skin cells are sloughing off, and with them, the dirt is coming off.
Yeah. And I mean, it's actually quite remarkable. It actually is designed to be self-cleaning. From what I understand, if you continue to walk on surfaces that would provide, you know, the, and you've probably done this yourself, if you walk on a concrete or something, and your feet were extremely dirty before from blacktop or whatever, they'll clean off. You know,
yeah.
And then they will just clean right off. So it's actually, again, the way we define dirt. And you made the good point about the produce and shopping carts and things people touch. It all comes down to the wet openings, you know, what you can touch. And your hands are what can touch those wet openings. It's very unnatural for your feet to be able to touch any of those wet openings.
Absolutely. It's something that on the surface, if you don't think about it very much, yes, going barefoot might look dirty. But the more you think about it, the more you realize that there's nothing more natural than going barefoot. And yeah, there are people who say that pooping in public is natural because our ancestors did that. But that's, we know there are hygienic and diseases, like problems that come from that. But the more we look at it, and yeah, there's still the misguided information about not going barefoot because you might get athlete's foot. Not going barefoot because you might get hookworms. Not going barefoot because you might get plantar warts. But we've talked about this before on the show. Hookworms come from infected feces. So as long as you're not walking in infected human feces, and again, thanks to the people not pooping in public, that's become less and less common. In the last 100 years, there's only been one case of hookworm in the United States. Like, it doesn't happen anymore. It's less common than bubonic plague. It actually
it's definitely overrated. It's, you know, ever since indoor plumbing, it's practically been wiped out. And actually, the theory about the people used to poop, almost every animal on the planet, almost, make an effort to hide their poop. You know, just like a cat will cover it up.
Right.
Dogs being domestic, you're not seeing how a wolf would actually do it in a spot as to not, you know, give their positions away. So even naturally, it was designed where it's, you know, off away from where people would normally be or other animals would normally be.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I think people get a little bit too riled up sometimes thinking about the natural thing. I've talked about, you know, breastfeeding before. Breastfeeding is absolutely natural, and there are people that get so offended by that. Like, it's feeding a baby, you know? Or walking barefoot. You know, I'm walking. What's the big deal? But it's because, you know, parts of your body that aren't normally exposed are exposed. Oh, my goodness. Think of the children. Someone posted in the, I think it was Society for Barefoot Living or Barefoot is Legal, one of those groups on Facebook. He made a meme. And it on the left side of the picture was his barefoot. It's like, oh, no, think of the children. And then on the right side of the picture with a foot with a flip-flop on, it's like, oh, phew, crisis averted. Like, there are people who think that this little thin rubber strap is all that you need to save your foot from being. And that's why your flip-tops work so well, because of the, you know, it's this public perception that you have to wear shoes.
All it is. And, you know, the amazing part is throughout history, people have been afraid of what they don't understand. I think this article points to something we're just now beginning to understand, the importance of these microorganisms and how they relate to us. Myself, as you know, I think it goes way deeper than that. I think it's critical. Part of just like working with our phones or the internet, you know, it's a communication device between the earth and other people and ourselves. I almost look at your feet as the diagnostic place where you plug in to, you know, see what's going on in your body and what you need and don't need, you know. So, and of course, this is just very abstract thinking about it, but more and more science is backing it up.
Absolutely. There's also more and more growing reasons not to wear flip-flops. I mean, a lot of people's go-to shoes when they can't be barefoot is flip-flops. But there's an article here from Bustle.com written by Kat George who says you should not wear flip-flops. So the article is called Six Reasons Never to Wear Flip-Flops, aside from the fact that they're an abomination to society. And I just want to go over this really quick. I know that time's short, but she says, I have a long and storied history with flip-flops. Having grown up in Australia, flip-flops are a beach and summer go-to shoe for most. When I was growing up, Havians were just about the coolest shoes you can own, and I saved my pocket money to buy myself two pairs, one pastel pink and the other bright green. It was an innocent and horrible time, one filled with white pants, floral scarf dresses, band t-shirts, and of course, insanely colored flip-flops. Thankfully, I grew up, realized flip-flops are absurd and should never ever be worn, especially by city-dwelling folk. The following PSA is for summer. When you're hot and sweaty and looking for release, it might be tempting to wear the literal thong of the shoe world, but as we know, the path of the righteous man is beset on all sides by the iniquities of the selfish and the tyranny of evil shoe options. Blessed is he who in the name of charity and goodwill does not wear flip-flops. So these are her six reasons to not wear flip-flops. Number one, flip-flops are not shoes. Flip-flops are bits of rubber pretending to be shoes. If a plank of wood came up to you and told you it was a tree, would you believe it? No, you wouldn't, because a plank of wood is a plank of wood and a tree is a tree. Same goes for flip-flops and shoes. Reason number two, no one wants to see that much of your foot. I'm not saying I agree with this article. I'm just saying it's kind of written as satirical.
Absurd.
This will come as no shock to most of you, but feet are ugly. Flip-flops are like feet G-strings. You go out wearing them, and you're forcing people to see a whole lot more than they ask to. While there's nothing technically wrong with seeing feet, generally in public, we prescribe a certain dress code so we don't frighten small children with parts of our body that are less pretty. Also, like butts, feet can be pretty gnarly, and calluses, bunions, and scary heels shouldn't be a part of anyone's morning commute. I'd like to reiterate that if you don't wear shoes, you don't have calluses and bunions that are hideous. The calluses that you have are on the bottom of your feet. She's also saying your feet shouldn't be that exposed to the subway floor. Think about what you're exposing your feet to. And again, like we talked about, we need to be exposed to these germs. She says, sure, you're exposed to lots of gross stuff every time you step out of the house, but you can take off your shoes when you re-enter the house, leaving the hepatitis at the door. You can't take off your feet. You can wash them, though. But yeah, she talks about other reasons. Flip-flops are ugly. There are other cute open-toe options that are not flip-flops, and they're dangerous. This is the one that drew me to this article, that they're dangerous. Ooh. Flip-flops come off easily. They bend backward. You could trip. You could be driving a car and one gets stuck behind the brake. You could really hurt yourself. Or worse, you could hurt someone else with all your clumsy flip-flopping around. Don't be a public nuisance. Don't put lives in danger. Do not wear flip-flops. And I agree with that sentiment. Do not wear flip-flops. Just go barefoot this summer. You know, as summer's
exactly.
Coming to a close.
Even though I designed flip-tops to emulate flip-flops, I don't wear flip-flops. I don't care for them. Just don't wear them. I would agree there, but a very absurd article in my opinion.
I think most of it was written to be satire, except for the last point.
Yeah, but you know, I always love the thing about feet are ugly. Hands are ugly too, if you want to look at it as quote ugly. It don't look
ears ugly. Are ugly, necks are ugly. Any
yeah,
body part
but,
taken by itself is kind of.
But we don't pay attention
body
to
part.
Them because we see them everywhere. You know.
Exactly.
We see bare hands everywhere. I can't remember. Thinking about what a quote bare hand looked like so much because I don't really sit there and stare at people's hands.
Exactly.
Same with feet,
yeah.
If it was commonplace, you know.
As we close up, we've got about 30 seconds left. I just want to share something from Trissa King, who is a quite prominent barefooter. She said she went out, she has bare arms, a bare neck, bare head, bare legs. You know, she's in little shorts. And she says, and I'm being perfectly fine. Oh, and also I have bare feet, because that's natural. Have a nice day, everyone. I just think that's great. We've got about 10 seconds left, so thank you everyone who listened. Hopefully it was the whole internet, even though I'm optimistic, you know. Have a great week. Stay barefoot. Next week, we are trying to get a guest on that you can call in and ask questions. Make sure you refresh the page, because our show is over. Bye-bye.
Bye.